You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa! The Punt Podcast, Midweek Edition.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill, Dave Kellner in the studio. We're going to take a reflective look on what we've seen in the Premier League and the FA Cup over the course of the last 48 hours or so, and we're going to talk Champions League football on this edition of the podcast as well, because a rarity this midweek, no big games. Alex Dunn joins me here in the studio. Alex, first of all, a warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Dave Kellner. Hello and hello and hello, listeners. Hello.
Hi. Are you well? You seem well. You seem chipper.
I'm refreshed. Cheltenham week is busy in William Hill offices.
Oh, it is.
On the horse racing front.
Yep.
And it's quite nice after Cheltenham to have a week where there isn't any big games in the football and to just reflect and just be grateful for what we have and look back on what we've had and look ahead to what's to come.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure to be in the studio with you, as per usual. Let's talk Premier League to start off with, and I'll spin you through the betting. A betting without Manchester City, because we all know Manchester City have had this title wrapped up for the last 4 or 5 months now. Betting without Manchester City here with William Hill. Manchester United are 4-7 in that market. Liverpool 5-2. Tottenham 5-1. And Chelsea 20-1. The Premier League table as things stand. City a whopping 16 points clear at the top, ahead of Manchester United, who are on 65 points in second. Liverpool, who had that outstanding performance against Watford at the weekend, winning 5-0. Mohamed Salah got 4 of those. 63 points after 31 games. Tottenham Hotspur, 30 games played, 61 points. Then there's a 5-point gap back to Chelsea, who were on 56 points. Manchester United, understandably, given that they are a couple of points ahead of Liverpool with that game in hand, a 4-7 and odds on to finish second behind Manchester City in the Premier League. And even though there have been serious frustrations with Manchester United throughout the season, Jose Mourinho knows how to, the old cliche, how to grind out a result. And it has been a grind for Manchester United.
It has. That said, in the betting without market, that 4-7's brilliant. I don't know why that's not 3s on, 4s on.
Yeah.
Genuinely, when you look at the fixtures they've got to come, they've got a game in hand on Liverpool, who they're already 2 points clear of, and they're 4 points clear of Tottenham. Man United's fixtures are fine. They've got an away game at Man City. Okay, that is obviously a concern. Otherwise, home to Arsenal, and the rest are easy. Swansea at home, West Brom at home, Watford at home, away games at Brighton, West Ham and Bournemouth to come. That 4-7's great. Like, really. Look, it's a short price and you're waiting, 10 weeks for the outcome. But if you're putting it in with some other things that hopefully we'll put up a little bit later on, I think that's brilliant.
And one thing to note about that Manchester City match, Manchester City could potentially, there's a possibility that could be for them to clinch the title, which would be wonderful for City and their fans. But that game is sandwiched in between the Champions League first leg and second leg against Liverpool. And I mean, the first leg is scheduled for the 3rd of April. 4 days later, there's that game at the Etihad against Manchester United. 3 days after that, they've got the second leg. If that Champions League fixture is in doubt for Manchester City, which given their travel to Anfield in the first leg, it could be, they might be tempted to rest players in that match.
No. Well, the thing that I've been so impressed with City this year is how few players they've actually used. They don't have a big squad. You think of City's... Right, let's look at Man United. Man United could feasibly play two different Premier League 11s and you wouldn't bat that much of an eyelid. For example, they rested players in the Cup against Brighton and you almost didn't notice because you looked at the team and you go, oh, that's strong. Then you look at the bench and you go, oh, well, hang on, Pogba, Sanchez, etc.
Yeah.
But they've got that wealth of players. Man City don't have that. They really don't. They've got... They don't have two players for every position, if you like. But they have versatile players. So Zinchenko, who's come in this season and been playing at left back, he's an attacking midfielder. Mm-hmm. They've just gone, can you play football, son? Oh, you can. Right, left back. Sunday league style.
And they don't need defenders, though, do they, Manchester City?
They do somewhere.
Yeah, but they have defenders, but they have defenders that are ball-playing defenders and Pep Guardiola trusts them to keep possession well and not make any serious errors in that part of the game where they maybe give up 10-15% possession. Just don't make errors at that moment in time.
But Kevin De Bruyne has had no rest this season.
He's a bionic man.
He's not getting tired. It's crazy. He's box to box. He's everywhere. And you look at some players. So let's take Mesut Ozil, say. Ozil will not play in the majority of cup games that Arsenal have. De Bruyne has been playing against everybody. You name it, he's played against them this season. He just does not rest. Mm. It's been incredible. And he's either due a real downturn in form, but with 8 games of the Premier League season to go, you have to say it's not looking likely, is it?
Liverpool are second in the market there at 5-2 to finish behind Manchester City in the Premier League. Their fixture list, Palace away, Everton away, Bournemouth home, West Brom away, Stoke at home, Chelsea away, Brighton at home. That's a pretty easy fixture list to finish the season for Liverpool. I know they've got the Champions League to be concerned about, but Chelsea away, really the only match in that run where you'd think they might drop points.
Agreed.
Mohamed Salah is now 1-10 to be Premier League top goal scorer with William Hill. If punters are looking for an alternative to Manchester United in that market, why not Liverpool?
Because Man U are already 2 points clear and they've got a game in hand. And let's say that for Man U, we're saying, right, that game against Man City away is the loss. And for Liverpool, you're saying that game away at Chelsea is perhaps the loss. And the rest is plain sailing. But it is for both sides. Mm. Man U are at home to Arsenal. I'm okay with that. Arsenal shouldn't be threatening Man U at Old Trafford. I don't think they will anyway.
Yeah.
So it's merely the fact that Man U have already got that start on them. I take what you're saying. I can't see Liverpool dropping many points between now and the end of the season. But as you said, once they get third, Liverpool, or third or fourth is confirmed, if they're still in with a chance in the Champions League, they're certainly going to be going for that, aren't they? You'd much rather win the Champions League and finish fourth than go out in the semi-finals of the Champions League and finish second, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that I'd rather have the 5-1 on Spurs, I think, to...
Possibly.
To finish behind Manchester City, given that Spurs are in such incredible form in the Premier League. Their last defeat came in that away game at the Etihad against Manchester City. Since then, they've dropped points at home against West Ham, away at Southampton, away at Liverpool. Apart from that, perfect results for Spurs. They beat Bournemouth in their most recent Premier League encounter, obviously beat Swansea comprehensively in the FA Cup as well. They are without Harry Kane for 4 weeks and they have got Chelsea away and Manchester City at home in that time as well, which are notable negatives. But City maybe will think April the 14th, that fixture at home against Manchester City. If they don't rest players in that run where they've got Liverpool twice in the Champions League and Manchester United at home, this is the game there where they will freshen things up, I think. Manchester City might have the title wrapped up by then.
It's been interesting as well because they have... And we've seen this in recent years with them as well. When Kane does get injured, I love them. I love watching them when Son's at the forefront of it. Because they just have so much room, the likes of Eriksen, Lamella. Ali didn't play, did he, in the Cup? But it frees them up. You cannot say Harry Kane is a bad thing for Tottenham. I'm not saying that in the slightest. But just the fact that they don't have a figure who's standing up there, it makes them so, so good to watch. And I think they're trying to get Son tied down to a long-term deal, and rightly so, because he's superb.
Yeah.
And to think that he's not always an automatic starter. If you were to name their best team a few people would not have him in there. They'd rather play maybe two holders and give Ali a bit of freedom.
I'd say 3 or 4 months ago that would be correct. I think he's elevated his standing, hasn't he, in the last 3 or 4 months, Heung-min Son, where he is now a regular in that starting 11, and it's inconceivable that Mauricio Pochettino, if the question was asked, give us your best 11, that Heung-min Son would be missing from that lineup now.
Mm. No, true. But I think they've had a good season, Tottenham, but it's how many good seasons can you have without a trophy? Sounds like a joke, but it's not. And I know that on social media you get a lot of Arsenal fans having a go at Tottenham for, you know, winning the trophy, for putting pressure on teams, etc., etc. Tottenham do need to win something soon.
Yes.
And this season, they've only got the FA Cup left, haven't they?
I think they might win the FA Cup, though.
They could.
Yeah.
They could, but I'd say if by this time next year they haven't won anything and he's still at the club, Pochettino will be looking elsewhere. Harry Kane may be looking elsewhere. This is sort of the golden age for Tottenham Hotspur. They need to start winning things. They're doing incredibly well. They're now firmly ensconced in the big team category. It always used to be the big four, didn't it? And now no one really knows. You know, is it a big five? Is it still a big four? Have Arsenal dropped out? Who knows?
I think it's just a top six and everyone else, isn't it, I think?
But then you look at the Premier League table, and I know that Arsenal fans have been complaining a lot this season. And you think, yeah, but come on, get over it. You're still in Europe. You're still going to get into Europe next year. And then you look at the table and you go, hang on, they're adrift of anyone half decent.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where you look 8 points below Arsenal and 2 places below them, you've got Leicester and Everton. Well, Everton were struggling. They look like relegation candidates for a good, the first third of the season, you'd say, probably. Burnley have been on this abject run for so long.
Mm.
I can kind of see where you're coming from, Arsenal fans.
And as far as the top four is concerned, Manchester United 1-100 in that market, Liverpool 1-14, Spurs 1-8, Chelsea 3-1, Arsenal 66-1. Is it the four we've got in those spots right now? City, United, Liverpool and Spurs who qualify for the Champions League?
I'm afraid it is.
Yes.
No value to be found there. Move on.
Mohamed Salah mentioned he's got 28 goals. I just saw you flicking towards the hashtag Premier League Your Odds section of the William Hill website, which is very interesting. Some good looking markets there. Mohamed Salah to score over 31.5 goals this season in the Premier League is 4-7. He would need 4 more in the remaining 7 games that Liverpool have to eclipse that particular total. Will he do it?
Yes, he will. He's just done that in a game, hasn't he? Let's face it.
He has.
No, he's been so, so good. And you question exactly why. Because, yes, he's a very, very good player, but we saw him at Chelsea, and I know you can't define someone on what they did at Chelsea, see De Bruyne, Lukaku, etc. But how can this almost go unnoticed? That, oh, hang on, he could be really good if you just play him in the right position and actually give him a run of games. Mm. It's really odd. But I went to Anfield a few weeks ago and watched Newcastle there, and as the teams lined up, just about to kick off, I just nudged my mate and I just went, that front three is frightening.
Yeah.
And normally at an away game, you're buzzing. You're thinking, go on then, let's go get at him. You just look at the front three, and they just stood there, they're not doing anything. And you just think, phew, that's some talent. And in that game, they were fairly quiet, Liverpool. But Salah just has that knack of being right place, right time, scoring goals. He's been superb. And that 4-7, just as the Man U to finish second in the Premier League, I really like. I think it's a pretty good 4-7.
If you're looking for a fascinating website that's got all the stats on, by the way, as well, which I've been looking at in the last fortnight or so, understat.com is intriguing. It gives you a breakdown of expected goals, which is a fair barometer for how a team is going to perform in the future.
Mm.
Expected goals and how they've done it in past weeks as well. Mohamed Salah, if you take his expected goals, it's 21.14 for the Premier League season. Obviously, he's got 28, so he's performing above his expected goals so far in the season. That is testament to his clinicalness in front of goal so far for Liverpool in his first campaign. It's whether or not he can produce this in the next five seasons, I had a heated debate with some of my friends about if you had the choice of having Mohamed Salah or Harry Kane, who would you take? And it is an intriguing question right now because Kane's got the longevity. But if you were creating a World 11, for instance, would Mohamed Salah be in there and Harry Kane omitted?
That's a good question, Dave. That's one of the... They were the best things you've ever said.
They're incomparable, aren't they?
They are.
In terms of their style of play.
But at the same time, Spurs set up to get the best out of Harry Kane. Liverpool set up to get the best out of Mo Salah. That's really interesting, though, because I think a lot of why Salah has been good this season, and he has been superb, is because Firmino, Mane and Coutinho, while he were there, they attract defenders too.
And I think Firmino's the key because he runs tirelessly into the channels and he opens the space for a player of Mohamed Salah's quality. And it's his unselfishness, I think, that really separates him maybe from both Mane and Salah in that front three.
I'll still take Kane, if that's okay.
I agree with you.
But only just because what's the point of having a goal scorer if you're not creating enough? Depends who's in behind him, but... That's a good question, Dave.
So just to wrap up this section of the podcast,
yes,
we're saying Mohamed Salah, you're saying he scores over 31.5 goals this season at 4-7.
He does.
And you're taking Manchester United as quite a strong bet.
Very strong bet.
Behind Manchester City, despite Mourinho's recent meltdowns after that game against Sevilla.
Ah, he's all right.
Where he said, yeah, this is nothing new for Manchester United getting knocked out in Europe. I've sat here before and knocked them out. And this time I've just got them knocked out. And then, inexplicably, has thrown Luke Shaw under that bus once again.
He doesn't like him, does he?
After the weekend.
I may be in a minority here. I still love Mourinho.
Do you?
And it might be because he's never been at my club and he's not the one who's...
Do you still like that surliness then?
Yeah, he's basically that in about 8 years' time.
I tell you what, if you were going to have anyone play you in a movie and Mourinho was the actor,
I think that would be a
fair representation.
I love him. I like what he does. And I know that, you know, you'll have Man U fans listening to this and some Chelsea fans going, what? He's negative, he's this, he's that. I think he's a character. I think he's great. I really like him. And I think Man U will finish second in the league this year. And that'll be seen in some quarters as a success. But that is because of how good Man City have been this season. Mm. If you just said at the start of the season, you'll be celebrating the fact that you could finish second. It just goes to show how far and away the best side in the league, Manchester City, are and have been this season.
The more interesting picture from a betting perspective is the relegation one. West Brom are 1-100 to be relegated. Stoke are 1-3. Huddersfield 6-4. Southampton 2-1. West Ham 9-4. Swansea 4-1. Crystal Palace 11-2. Your team, Newcastle, are 14-1. Brighton 16-1. Bournemouth 20-1. Watford 66-1. This ties in with the to finish bottom market as well. West Brom 1-16 to finish bottom. Stoke are 8-1. Southampton 20-1. Huddersfield 25-1. Crystal Palace 50s. Swansea 50s. And West Ham 50-1. We've got to start with West Brom, I think, given they are rock bottom of the Premier League. They've picked up just 20 points from 31 games, just 3 wins. 2 of those came in the first 2 weeks of the season. Stoke City, 19th, 27 points from 31 games. Southampton, who were victorious in the FA Cup this weekend and have made Wembley there, they've picked up 28 points from their 30 games. Mark Hughes starting his tenure with a win. West Ham 30 points from 30 games. Palace 30 points from 31. Huddersfield 31 from 31. Swansea 31 from 30. Newcastle have picked up 32 points from 30. Brighton 34 from 30. It's been so congested throughout the entire season at the bottom of the table, but West Brom cut adrift. A manager in Alan Pardew, you know everything about Alex, given he was at your club for how long? Fair while, wasn't it?
Long enough.
Yeah, long enough. Yeah. Too long, some might say. Mm. And there was that expected new manager bounce when he came in for Tony Pulis. That never even began to materialise. And he has, in recent weeks, his quotes have been very depressing, if you're a West Brom fan. After the weekend, he said, it's just tough. There's things going against us. But when you're down the bottom of the league, that does happen. That doesn't inspire any sort of fight or belief in this West Brom unit.
No. And as you said, that new manager bounce, if Pardew's got anything going for him, it's that he can motivate players at the beginning of his reign. Because he is fresh, he's new, he's a bit quirky, a bit of a wide boy. He's the kind of person that, now that he hasn't got that kind of attitude and he hasn't got those performances out of the team, you look at their last few games, and I don't think that they were as good as Down. People were writing them off 5-6 weeks ago, as they had done with Swansea. But the last four games in particular, at home to Huddersfield, away at Watford, at home to Leicester, and away at Bournemouth, they could quite feasibly have taken 7-9 points from those games. That would not be a ridiculous thing. If you'd have said, hey Dave, West Brom are going to meet Huddersfield, you'd have gone, yeah, okay. If you'd have said, then they're going to go to Watford and draw, and then they're going to scrap their way to a win against Leicester, then they're going to come undone at Bournemouth, you'd have gone, oh yeah, I can completely see that happening. But they've failed when they really could not afford to. Everyone in that bottom 6, 7, 8 have had slumps this season. West Brom's has come at the worst time, and it's been the most prolonged.
In Pardew's defence, he should have won two of those games. They should have beaten Bournemouth at the weekend. I know they ended up losing.
Hang on, why is that in Pardew's defence?
Well, just to go back to what he was saying about being a little bit down on his luck, basically, okay. Or the team have been a bit luckless in recent weeks. They deserved to win that game away at Bournemouth. Junior Stanislas scored that wonderful free kick in the closing stages, a game that West Brom were better than Bournemouth in all honesty. And the game against Huddersfield, they should have at least scrapped a point in that game, if you take expected goals as a fair barometer, like I mentioned earlier. So maybe just in Pardew's defence, I know you don't want to hear from Pardew's defence.
Sorry for snapping at you there, Dave.
Yeah, no, it's fine. That maybe those are a couple of results that could have gone a different way for West Brom on any other given day.
I think the thing for West Brom is the personnel, the playing personnel are so uninspiring.
Yes.
And the team hasn't changed that much in the last few years, and it's the same team that under Pulis you'd have looked at that team and gone, 1-0 at home. They'll win enough games 1-0 at home to get themselves out of this. Mm. But now the defence isn't performing as it was. Up front they haven't changed much, and Rondon and Rodriguez actually looked lively against Bournemouth. I know that you like Rondon a lot.
Yeah.
Almost unhealthily so. And I actually quite like Jay Rodriguez. And I think
Jay Rodriguez, if he could stay fit for a long period.
And you look at certain players and you think, well, hang on, if West Brom go down here, Rodriguez, Rondon, Johnny Evans, maybe Kieran Gibbs, you could see them moving to... I'm not saying I particularly like Kieran Gibbs, but he's a slightly bigger name perhaps than others around there. But you can see them feasibly moving to other mid-table Premier League sides, or in Johnny Evans' case, crikey. Anyone in the Premier League apparently is after him.
That was sort of that moment in the middle of the season where people started talking about Johnny Evans, and you thought, have I slipped into some sort of parallel universe here? And that sort of chatter has been hushed in recent weeks, hasn't it?
Well,
somewhat.
Right, let's talk. You've got me onto something now. This has bothered me. The England squad. People say, how's so-and-so not in here? How's this, you know, as a Newcastle fan, Jamal Lascelles, everyone's been saying, why is he not in? I'm not saying he necessarily should be, although I think he probably should be, but it's players like Palace fans going, James Tomkins, why is he not in the England squad? And Brighton fans going, Lewis Dunk, why is he not in the England squad? Well, do we want an England squad made up of defenders for teams who have been battling relegation all season? They're there for a reason. It's not just the fact that the strikers are rubbish. I don't get that. Phil Jones has not had a fantastic season for Manchester United. But look where they are compared to the players. And I know it's all relative. And if you put Phil Jones in a struggling side, would he perform?
And he's been pretty much first choice for Manchester United this season, hasn't he?
But I just don't understand that the clamour for James Tomkins. Palace fans will go, oh, he's tried so hard this season, he's defended really well, he's done this. Well, fine, but you've let in 48 goals this season, Palace fans. Manchester United have let in less than half of that. I know it's a whole team thing and you can't pinpoint it on that, but...
You know why you get this, Alex? I'll tell you why you get this. Jake Livermore.
Yes,
That's why you get this. Because,
he's the root cause of this.
You see Jake Livermore in that England squad, and that means that any other player...
Oh, yeah.
In any other team, if these fans get their back up, they can justifiably say, Well, Jake Livermore's in there. So I think Jake Livermore is the root cause of this problem.
Agreed. 100% agree. But it's just one of those things. Yeah. We weren't talking about that, but it really got my goat up on Twitter last week.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Mm. So West Brom are down. We know that.
Yes.
They've only got 20 points from 31 games. They're going to finish bottom as well. The rest of the... you've got six or seven teams in there that could still conceivably go down. Stoke City, we've got a Stoke City fan in the office who does nothing but talk about Stoke City.
Well, I can't understand him. I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. And they've got Paul Lambert at the helm now, who has improved them slightly, but they've still only got one win in eight under Lambert, and they've drawn too many games in that spell as well. And I think that he's been criticised, Lambert, for, even though he's managed to instill a bit more fighting spirit, he's still picking the wrong side and the wrong formation, according to a lot of Stoke fans.
Yeah, and again, you look at the personnel and they're just pretty uninspiring. You take Shaqiri out of it and the rest of them aren't really doing it for you, to be honest.
Do you think they go down then?
Well, I was looking... OK, do I think they go down? Yes. But from a price point of view, I was looking just to see... Because obviously, yes, you can back a team to go down. You can also back a team to stay up. And Stoke are 9-4 to stay up. And I thought, well, one result, and all of a sudden, that 9-4 could feasibly be pretty much even money. 11-10 sort of mark. But I think that's the key, one result. And you look at what they've got up next. They've got Arsenal, haven't they, next away in the Premier League. They've still got to play Tottenham. They've still got to play Liverpool. It's not going to be easy.
I was looking at this from a betting perspective as well, I think if you want to back Stoke to stay up, you've got to do it later in the season.
That's the thing.
Because of those games against Arsenal and Spurs coming up, and then West Ham away as well, which is going to be a monumental clash, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I flagged up on this podcast probably about 6 weeks ago that you could back Palace at the time to go down at a kind enough price and then cash out.
Yeah,
because we knew they had a bad run coming up. They lost the majority of those games. And now they're out of that slump. They play Liverpool next. But then after that, Palace have got six fairly nice games coming off the back of that win against Huddersfield. For Stoke, you can't even get yourself into a positive betting opportunity with that, if you like. You have to back them to go down now at threes on. If you're wanting to get a bit back, I'd wait three, four games to go when they are 4 or 5 points adrift. That's when it could happen. It just doesn't look likely. Again, Stoke are a team, just like West Brom, who have built the foundation of their Premier League survival over the past however many years on a good defence, first and foremost. And Mark Hughes tried to change that into Stoke playing more attractive football, and that eventually got him the sack. And now Paul Lambert's in, and they're sort of trying to do a hybrid of things. Nice football with Peter Crouch up front, and it sort of isn't quite working. Mm. I think they are going to go down.
Yeah, I do. I think the best bet in this market, and this is a bet that I love, Huddersfield to be relegated at 6-4, I think is an outstanding price. I think there was belief after results against Bournemouth and West Brom that they were safe, and they've lost subsequently against Tottenham and Crystal Palace. That draw against Swansea, sandwiched in between those two results, has left them reeling, in my opinion. My concern is that the expected goals against Palace at home was 0.22, and then they only had 1.39 expected goals against Swansea after Jordan Ayew had been dismissed early on. They had 30 shots in that game, but only 4 on target. They're away at Newcastle and at Brighton. They've got a small squad, and they've got Chelsea, Everton, Man City and Arsenal as their last 4 games. That concerns me greatly with Huddersfield, who have overachieved this season, haven't they? They were expected to be bottom of the Premier League at the start of the campaign. Hmm. Many people thought Huddersfield are going to finish bottom. They were odds on for relegation. If anything, they've overachieved so far, and I can see them going down.
Well, they made a really good start to the season, winning at Palace, and then they beat Newcastle, and then mid-season, or just before mid-season, they beat Man U, of course, at home. And then more recently, they had that little run where they beat Bournemouth and then won at West Brom. They're quite streaky, almost. When they've got confidence, that they're a good side, but then they do suffer from a lack of confidence at times as well. The end to the season for them is brutal.
Yeah.
There's two reasons why they could stay up.
The only positive with that end to the season is that there might not be much incentive for some of those top teams.
That's true. Man City away, Arsenal home, and they've got to fit Chelsea away in there at some point as well. I take on board what you're saying, and yes, it's probably not the worst time to be playing them. But the two reasons why Huddersfield could stay up, one's Southampton, the other's West Ham. They're not going to do it themselves, Huddersfield, I don't think. I think that they're on 31 points now. You could feasibly see them getting to 36 at most, maybe 37 at a push. Newcastle away, Brighton away, Watford at home, Everton at home. You take those four games, you'd think that possibly 4 points.
Yeah, could pick up six maybe.
Yeah, but it's basically what West Ham and Southampton do that's key. But Huddersfield, I think, if you're backing them to go down at the price they are now, what did you say it was?
6-4.
It's appealing. It really is.
I think it's a good price.
Yeah.
I think Southampton have got too much quality. I think that you've talked about uninspiring personnel at some of the clubs we've discussed down at the bottom. Southampton are one side where I think they've got a decent squad.
Yeah, they are the hashtag too good to go down.
They have, aren't they?
Yeah, you definitely get one every year.
Yeah.
And the change of manager for them may not have come at the right time. They could have done it earlier. I don't think Mark Hughes is very good, personally.
But I can't believe they didn't do it earlier.
In the Pardew mould, he is an inverted commas, motivator. He'll shout at people. Pellegrino won't have done that.
Yeah.
So, and against Wigan, they didn't show that much quality, but they showed a bit of heart at least. And they've got some players who, like you said, I'm a massive fan of Højbjerg. I think whatever happens this season, he should probably leave.
I like Lamina as well. I think he's
one of those players in the Idrissa Gueye kind of mould who has somehow managed to stand out in a bad team. And obviously Idrissa Gueye went to Everton and now he's performed pretty well there. You could see Lamina doing a similar thing. I don't think he's a world beater, but
Dusan Tadic has underperformed this season, but he's a good player. Sofiane Boufal they've got as well. I mean, I think they've got some real talent in that Southampton side.
They do, but they could still go down. And if you'd have asked me this time last week, I'd have said yes. They're going to go down. The change of manager is the only thing that's perhaps going to swing it. And again, we mentioned with Huddersfield, Southampton and West Ham are the two reasons that Huddersfield may not go down. Well, Southampton, they need to do it themselves. They're 2 points adrift at the minute. So if Southampton do win a game, you get a lot of teams in that relegation battle who win a game and go, I think we're okay now. Southampton need 2, possibly 3 wins to get themselves out of that mess. They are running out of games,
yeah.
But I think they might just get out, but only just.
Yeah, and
West Ham, 2-1 is good.
West Ham being catastrophic. Their season, this move to the London Stadium, I know that's a couple of years now, but
yeah.
It's not worked out for them there. They've had demonstrations on and off the pitch. The players aren't demonstrating much talent on the pitch at the moment. Karen Brady came out and spoke in the press about what had gone wrong at West Ham rather than on the West Ham website where everyone thought those comments should have been made. Whatever those three do, Brady, Gold and Sullivan, they do incorrectly, basically.
Yeah, the club
is... They only open their mouths to put their foot in it.
It's rotten, isn't it, the club?
Yeah.
But it's rotten from top to bottom. The players that West Ham sign are players that are over the hill.
Yes.
That's what they do. They sign big names on big wages when they don't have the drive to go and better themselves. The only player I can think of in recent years who has left West Ham and still been at their peak was Payet. Everyone else, you look at Zabaleta, you look at Evra, this is this year, Hernandez, they're all players who have peaked already. And you're getting them for the end of their career when they're just there for money, basically. And I'm not saying it's the same with every player. Just as earlier, I wasn't saying James Tomkins can't be in the England squad. I'm not saying he's a bad defender. I'm not saying that Lascelles can't be in the England squad or should be. I'm saying that when you're at that level, you need a certain type of player to get you out of it. West Ham don't have many of those players. Mm. They'd love a James Tomkins right now to drag them up.
They had a James Tomkins.
Well, they did once. but to say, right, come on, this is what's going to happen here. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. You're going to... of course, it doesn't help when fans come on the pitch anyway. But if they do stay up this season, they need an overhaul. If they go down, they're going to overhaul anyway.
I think as they go down, it's worrying, though, because they've like you just mentioned, they've got players that are over the hill on huge wages at that club who will have no incentive to leave. They won't be wanting to take a pay cut to go to another side when they can sit in the either in the dugout or meander around the pitch on huge wages.
Yeah, agreed. So the fact that they're 9-4 to go down is going to tempt some. honestly, I think they could.
It's a difficult market, isn't it? Because it's difficult. We said West Brom and Stoke are going to go down, and then I like Huddersfield to slip in there, but they've got a point on West Ham at the moment and 3 points on Southampton, albeit they have played a game more than both those teams.
You couldn't get three more teams, Huddersfield, West Ham and Southampton, with three more differing attitudes around the clubs right now. Huddersfield are still enjoying themselves, really.
Yeah.
Because they said at the start of the season that they're going to be in this position anyway. May as well enjoy it. Southampton are down in the dumps, but the potential to be resurgent.
And they've got a new manager at a vital point.
And West Ham are now plummeting. I'm going to say Huddersfield go down.
I am as well. And I just think that
But I don't want them to.
No, I just think that West Ham will... I mean, their fixture list is appalling, isn't it, really, at West Ham? You look at Southampton at home, Chelsea away, Stoke at home, Arsenal away, City at home, Leicester away, Everton at home, with Manchester United to fit in as well at some point. That is a pretty bad run of fixtures to finish the season.
For starters, they'd probably rather be away from home than at home at the minute.
Yeah.
Which, case in point, we were talking out in the office, they played Southampton next, obviously, a huge game. I said, how would you price that up? And you said, it's tricky, probably 6-4 West Ham, which I would have done too.
Yeah.
West Ham are 15-8, Southampton are 6-4. You've got a side who are in the relegation zone who are favourites away from home against a side who aren't in the relegation zone. I can't think of many times that's happened.
No.
But it's going to be difficult. I'm going to say Huddersfield just, but look, if you have a strong view on Huddersfield, Southampton West Ham...
The more we talk about this, the more I'm thinking West Ham at 9-4 is the best.
But the more that Stoke at 9-4 to stay up is actually not the worst, because for all I've said that I think they will go down, one win is all they need, and all of a sudden they're right back in that mix. It's really difficult.
I implore you, listeners, to take a screenshot of that relegation market and see how that changes in the next...
Yeah.
I know it's International Week this weekend, but the next fortnight or so, and see how that differs from week to week until the end of the season.
And I assume that, because we've not mentioned them, we're suggesting it is between those teams now. We're not going to mention Swansea or Palace or Newcastle or Brighton or Bournemouth or Watford, which is...
I think they all survive
just,
now. And I think Carlos Carvalhal coming in has saved Swansea.
Yeah, he's been fantastic.
He's been fantastic. And I think Newcastle have the right man in the job, definitely, in Rafa Benitez. And they've pulled together some good performances, good results recently.
At the same time, Newcastle play Huddersfield next. If Huddersfield were to go to St James's Park and win, and it is a big if they were to do that, that'd leave Huddersfield on 34, Newcastle on 32 all of a sudden, and be going, oh, hang on. Yeah. It can change so quickly. One thing I will just draw your attention to, because we're going to go off the Premier League now.
Yeah.
Here's a fun stat for you, Dave. Top 10 in the Premier League have all won their last game.
There you go.
I don't know when the last time... It's the first time that's happened since Alex Dunn's stats began mid-March 2018. That's quite interesting. I was going to say it'll probably be at the start of the season, but not everyone wins at the start of the season. There'll be a draw in there.
Yeah,
there you go.
There you go, we're finished with a meaningless stat from Alex Dunn there. Champions League football then. We had the draw, I think it was last Friday, wasn't it? Thursday or Friday, after we recorded the Pump podcast anyway. Barcelona 5-2, Manchester City 100-30, Bayern Munich 7-2, Real Madrid 4-1, Juventus 10-1, Liverpool 12-1, Roma are 50-1, Sevilla are 50-1. Manchester United knocked out by Sevilla after that appalling performance. It has to be said. And Spurs went out against Juventus as well, which was obviously very frustrating for Spurs. They were, in the space of 4 minutes, they lost that game. A couple of defensive lapses and Juventus go through. Barcelona have drawn Roma. They play the first tie at home. Manchester City have Liverpool, which is the game we've got to talk about, really. Because Liverpool have got a good recent record against Manchester City, and they're 9-5 to win at home against them at Anfield. They've already done that once this season. 9-5 will stick out to a few punters.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to back Man City at 7-5 in that one.
Yep.
Yes, we know that they are much the best side in the Premier League this season, but to win a game at 7-5 that they don't have to win. If you offered Man City now 1-1, they'd happily take that, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, I think undoubtedly. Especially with the away goal.
I can't wait to watch that.
That's going to be brilliant. I tell you what makes that... They say that in boxing circles that styles make fights. Styles make football matches as well, don't they? And Manchester City will try and keep possession. Liverpool aren't bothered about that. They will press high up the field and then they will try and hit on the counter-attack. And you've got two managers with attacking philosophies... and two teams that are set up to attack as well. It's just going to be an unbelievable two-legged encounter.
Fantastic. And I know it's a cliche, all European nights at Anfield, but that will be a great atmosphere. Compare that to the second leg.
It is a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. I've had football journalists who've gone to matches around the globe, European football matches in the Champions League around Europe, and they have always said that Liverpool at Anfield on a big European night is unlike any other. So it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason.
The Etihad does nothing for me in the slightest. It's rarely full. There's always little dots of emptiness.
Yeah.
And
corporates.
Yeah. Well, how often can you say, oh, it was bouncing at the Etihad? I can think of when they won the league against QPR. That's the only time that you can genuinely see, you know, that it's shaking. I still think Man City will come out on top, though. Eventually.
Yeah, you think they'll prevail.
But as a complete and utter neutral in that one, you're just hoping it's a real spectacle. And the other three games as well, they are massively watchable, I have to say. There isn't one dud in there.
You think Bayern Munich and Barcelona both go through 1-7 Barcelona, Bayern Munich 1-7, not prices that really appeal from a betting perspective, but if you just had to say, you take the betting out of it, Barcelona go through, Bayern Munich go through.
Yeah, if you take the betting out of it. I don't like that Bayern 1-7 is awful, but yes.
Juventus-Real Madrid's the other one, and Juventus-Real Madrid couldn't play football any more differently, really. This is a match or a tie in which I think Juventus can progress at 11-8 as well.
I don't.
Oh, you don't?
I think they can. I don't think they will. It's interesting. They spent a lot of money, Juventus, on strengthening the attacking side of their game, and they started the season scoring way more goals than they have done previously. And then, by hook or by crook, they've sort of reverted back to being moderately defensive again, and it's got them to the top of the league. So why stop it? You know, I think people would like them to be more adventurous, but they're not. Real Madrid certainly are. I just think Real Madrid will have too much. And I just think Real Madrid have the ability to go there and score, firstly, and then to... I can't see Real Madrid not scoring in Italy.
Okay.
I can't see Real Madrid scoring less than twice at home.
Okay, yeah.
Therefore, law of averages suggests they're going to go through.
All the four favourites to qualify for the semi-finals, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester City, which would be fantastic if all four went through, just purely from a neutral perspective now. Don't mean to offend any Liverpool fans, any Juventus fans out there. 2-1 for those four teams all to qualify.
Mm.
And we'll finish with the FA Cup because we had the FA Cup this weekend and now we've got we had the live draw straight after it.
Hang on, are we going to mention the Europa League?
Oh, yeah, you want to just dip in with the Europa
League. I just don't know, Arsenal fans.
Yeah, okay. Dipping with the Europa League, where Atleti are favourites to win the Europa League here with William Hill.
No, 11-8, I think.
Yeah, they're 11-8, aren't they, with Arsenal second in at 9-4, Lazio 9-1, Leipzig 9-1, 12-1 Bar. Go on, give us your quick thoughts on the Europa League then.
I would say, can I be honest, I didn't see the draw last week. I saw the Champions League draw,
yep.
And we were so busy with Cheltenham stuff, it was until the weekend that I went, oh, there's the Europa League draw as well, was there? I mean, Arsenal, CSKA, Moscow, you couldn't ask for an easier draw. Mm. You really couldn't. I'd say it's a really moderate lineup, these quarterfinals. Sometimes you look at it, you go, any of them could win. I think there's only three teams that could win, and two of them are playing each other. I think Sporting Lisbon are massively overpriced to get the better of Atleti. I'll say that. I like Atleti. I think they're the most likely winners of the whole thing. But Sporting Lisbon are 100-30 to qualify from that game, from that tie. I think they might. I like Lisbon. I think they're good. So
they're 25-1 to win the competition as well.
On that logic.
Worth a few shekels, perhaps.
Why not? But I think Arsenal at 9-4 are worth a decent bet there.
Right.
Yes, that they have gone from not taking it seriously at all to all of a sudden going, well, hang on, kind of got nothing else to go for here.
If they win the Europa League, is it a successful season for Arsenal?
No. But right now it is, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'd back them to do that. Because the other teams in there are really not good. Lazio, Salzburg, Leipzig, Marseille. That they are, this is going to sound silly, they are the Europa League sides of their leagues. They are the teams that finish 6th and 7th, with the exception of obviously Salzburg, and they will win the league routinely, but it's in Austria. It's Arsenal's to lose, I'd say.
Okay. FA Cup, Chelsea 13-8, Tottenham 2-1, Manchester United 9-4, Southampton 9-1. Tottenham play Manchester United in the semi-final, Chelsea play Southampton. These semi-finals at Wembley, which has got to be a big factor. Spurs 11-8 to win against Manchester United, who were 6-4, the draw 9-4. I think Spurs will win this competition now. I think Chelsea, even though they are hot favourites to go through against Southampton, I don't think that's a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination. And Spurs, at 2-1, they need to win something. I think they'll be fully focused on this, and I expect Spurs to win the competition.
Okay. Yes. Yes, they can. I'm not sure if they will. I think Chelsea, you've got to back Chelsea at 13-8, okay, as far as I'm concerned, and then back whoever. Chelsea will beat Southampton. I have no doubt about that. Whether you want to take the twos on that they do it in 90 minutes or not is another matter, but Chelsea will get the better of Southampton in the other semi-final. So if you back Chelsea to win the whole thing now at 13-8, then come the day of the final, whether they're playing Tottenham or Man U, you can back the other team at what will be an odds against price and guarantee yourself a profit either way. Mm. There you are, betting strategy. Chelsea will beat Southampton. Simple. So for that reason, the 13-8 is really tempting, because Chelsea won't be 13-8. Well, I say that, actually. Will Chelsea be 13-8 against either Tottenham or Man U in a final? They probably would be around that, though.
Yeah, only in the 90-minute betting, yeah, perhaps. Yeah. But they should be shorter to win,
of course they
win
would,
the final.
It's
yeah,
interesting. Just, I think if you put Tottenham Man U together, I couldn't call it.
No?
I think it'll be an extra time job. I think it'll go the distance. You've got a Tottenham side who obviously play there all the time. Will Harry Kane be fit for this? You'd think possibly, or maybe on the bench.
Yeah, it'd be close, won't it?
And again, the movement of Son, etc., will trouble Manchester United. But then, Man U have got a great record at Wembley, haven't they?
Yeah.
Jesse Lingard always scores there, somehow. I'm not going to argue with you, Dave. Not because I'm scared of you, but it's nice to agree with you sometimes. I'm not going to be bullish and say Man U will beat Tottenham. I think it's priced up right. Tottenham, ever so slightly favourites, but I think that'll go the distance. Chelsea will beat Southampton. That's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. And I would be backing Chelsea to win the whole thing now at 13-8, purely because, in my mind, they're already finalists.
We will delve further into those two matches when they come around in a late April. Alex Dunn, thank you very much for your company. I've enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened to this edition of the Pump Podcast with a relatively blank midweek, just reflecting on some of the Premier League markets and looking forward to the FA Cup, Champions League and Europa League. I hope you've enjoyed that. I hope it's given you some pointers from a betting perspective as well. Don't forget to follow us both on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
At AlexDunn0307.
And mine's at the Kellner. Follow at William Hill for the latest enhancements, offers, that sort of thing. And make sure you check this podcast out via audioboom.com weekly. Just type in William Hill or The Punt and you will find all our podcasts are available. There will be a weekend edition of The Punt, which will be recorded and brought to you on Thursday as well. That's to look ahead to the internationals this weekend. So stay tuned for that later on in the week. Thank you once again, everyone that's tuned in and listened. And make sure you check out all the betting at williamhill.com. Until next time, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.